Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Our voice is one of the most important things about humans that we have. However, we don't always use it in the way that we can to give it its best power. Today we'll be talking to Katrina Ryan, voice educator and coach, and she's going to be speaking to us about how you can have your most powerful voice, whether that's in communication and everyday life, in your work, or indeed even as a singer. Katrina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is a topic that is of interest for anyone because that voice inside needs to come out. But for many of us, we're very scared to try to sing or to communicate. Mm. And in fact, public speaking, people would rather sit with a spider than stand up and speak within a crowd. So I was very interested, Katrina, in your business, what you've done, the services that you've set up, but you really came from a performance background yourself, didn't you? Tell us about you.
I started my career as a jazz vocalist. I went through the Elder Conservatorium and did my training in jazz voice. And then following that, I had a professional career for 15 years as the lead singer of E-Type Jazz, which is a jazz band.
I certainly remember and have come to see and didn't know that I would meet the lead singer of one day. Here we are.
Yeah, look, it was amazing. It was an absolutely incredible time and something that I really, really cherish. We had the opportunity to do an enormous amount of travel and national jazz festivals. We went over to the States three times to be part of G'day USA, which was a really incredible experience, and shining the baton for South Australia and Australia. It was really fabulous. Played at places like the Lincoln Centre and, you know, met movie stars.
Oh, which movie
very
stars
glamorous
did you meet?
I met John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, that would have been very special.
Hugh Jackman, The Wiggles, which at the time was huge because my son was a major Wiggles fan.
That would be really cool to go to school and say your mum has met the Wiggles.
Yeah, and Captain Feathersword was sitting next to us on the plane. So yeah, I dined out on that at home for a very, very long time. The kids were really excited about that. It was a really great time, and always adjunct to that was always my passion to be an educator. And I didn't do any training in education until much later in my life, but I always taught voice in schools and at home privately in studios as a way to sort of supplement my income in, you know, when things were a bit lean in terms of performing. And I really loved it. And I decided in 2016, after my dad passed away, to go back and study. So I did my master's in teaching. And that really inspired me to give people the opportunity to learn more about the power of voice. I've always been very passionate about the power of music, but I think having the opportunity to learn so much about voice and what voice does for us as individuals in helping us express ourselves and tune into our most authentic selves, it was actually a bit of a profound sort of light bulb moment for me. And I thought, oh, people don't know this stuff. Maybe that's what I need to do, is I need to go out and assist people to know it more. And it's been bizarre because it's been very, very organic, my life. I've always just followed my curiosity. And earlier this year, I was asked to be an adjunct lecturer at Flinders Uni in the acting department. So I work and teach anatomy and physiology to the acting students. And I love that. And then I also work with a lot of men and women in executive leadership roles to perhaps understand their vocal brand a little bit better and to perhaps communicate a little bit more effectively in the workplace. And so it's been a great journey over 30 years. This is where I am now.
It's an amazing journey, and congratulations, Katrina. And it's so good to see someone using those skills and talents to help others rather than just keeping that within. Mm. Katrina, there's a lot to unpack with this because there's really two streams. There's someone who wants to learn to sing and someone who wants to just improve their communication. Mm. But communication is such a great influence. If we look at society as it's been, the great orators of the world are the ones who've inspired for good or not necessarily so much for good. Mm. That power of the voice is very strong, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is. And I think often it's interesting because the people that will come to me are often people that are looking for some some change. For example, women who are now finding themselves in leadership positions in perhaps what would have been perceived in the past as being very male-dominated industries, and they don't know where their place really is in that environment anymore, and if their voice perhaps reflects a leadership and commanding presence, or whether it sort of sits back in more of, you know, a worker kind of mentality. And so they're navigating metaphorically how to find their voice in the workplace, but they're also navigating, does their vocal tone reflect themselves? You know, their perhaps their vocal brand, does their vocal brand reflect actually who they are or where they need to be in their workplace? I'm working with a gentleman at the moment who has been in the building industry all of his life, in his 50s now, and his body's getting really sore, and he's actually retraining as a funeral celebrant. And he's got a beautiful voice. He's got a lovely tone and he's a bit of a character and I can really see a place for him. But he said, I'm not used to being in that kind of environment where I'm very vulnerable and I'm having to be emotive. And he said, I'm used to, you know, rallying the troops on the building yard. Come on, blokes, you know, let's go, let's do this. And he said, I'm not really sure how to navigate that space now. So,
and there is something around that space. I mean, I've done public speaking for many, many years, started from my aerobics career. In fact, I thought if I could get people to jump around a room in these sorts of outfits, I could really perhaps do anything.
Yeah,
that's where it literally started, with no microphones, and they didn't train us how to use our voice. So I did have voice issues and had to go to someone to work on to get rid of nodules. I've always had quite a deep voice. And interesting you say about women, but if you look at women in a boardroom or women in an executive C-suite, their voice can be very powerful, but they do need to watch their tone because it can be overridden or not seen to have the same credibility.
Definitely. And I think one of the things that's probably developed over the last maybe 20 years has been a perception that women need to lower their voice in order to be commanding and actually have a lower tone. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I think women can still be very commanding in an environment where they're using their own authentic voice. It isn't just what they say. It is definitely how they say it. But sometimes lowering the voice, driving the voice to be louder at a lower pitch, can actually be what leads to some vocal fatigue rather than actually learning to project their voice in the vocal range that is most natural to them as females. One of my friends who I catch up with a fair bit, she's been coming to me at various points in time, and she's director in a law firm, an international law firm, and she negotiates. She's lived in Hong Kong and New York. She negotiates deals with countries. And she's the most quietly spoken person. And I've actually spoken to her a few times and said, you know, does it work for you or does it not work for you? And she said, you know what, I actually think it works for me because they're not threatened by me. They think that I'm not possibly going to be a pushover, but because I've got more of a gentle approach to negotiating, you know, with countries in a legal setting, it's actually working for me that I don't come across as intimidating or too commanding or too opinionated. I just sit back and then I put my thing in when it's time. So I really think it's about developing your authentic voice.
It's also fitting in with the audience, isn't it? Because for a lot of times when people have to present information, if it's 1, 2, 100, 500 people, it's having that belief come through the body and being confident, because body language, nonverbal, is far stronger than what we're actually saying. And people, when they have to do a speech, spend all their time focusing on the content, where it really is that how that you say it. You know, there's a saying that culture eats strategy. Well, tone beats content every time in a presentation.
It really, really does. And actually, it's interesting because you look around at what a lot of people, public speaking professionals, and what they're training people on, it is often still content. And it's actually not addressing a person's vocal brand. How do I sound? And, you know, you'll often get people, like women who are too high-pitched and too little or too quiet, or men who maybe are too gruff and it comes across as aggressive, and that is not their intent at all. But they just have never evaluated how people perceive their sound. And really, communication, a lot of the time, genuinely comes down to intent and to you misinterpreting or understanding somebody's intent. So the way that your vocal tone delivers that message is really important.
And how often do you hear people say, oh, I hate hearing my voice? So they leave ridiculous recorded messages on their autoresponse phone because they just don't want to have their real voice. Or turn that off, I don't want to hear me.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So it's really about, if you want to stand up in front of people, you have to be a lot more confident in your voice reflecting genuinely who you are. And really, you said at the beginning, you know, people come to me for singing and people come to me for public speaking, but really, even performing on stage, doing, you know, songs and presenting a cabaret show, if you really want to do it well, you have to be vulnerable. You have to let people see actually who you are and really genuinely tell a beautiful story that comes from the heart. That's what's going to enable you to be successful as a professional in the arts industry anyway. So at the end of the day, it's the same end goal. It's teaching people to love their voice and to connect, to like who they are and what they're saying.
And you've just said the key word there, Katrina, connection. I've often seen very skilled artists, but they make no connection with the audience at all. And that vulnerability, or just that being able to just look at someone and just say, it's good to be here, isn't it? And then nothing. But most people would never hold that space to say something, because when you speak to the one, people feel like you're speaking to them all. There's all these things that come into play, because they're so worried about getting the words or the song out. It's all in here. It's all within it's themselves. Internal. They're not looking at whom they're speaking to, because communication is for others to understand and bond and feel.
It definitely is. And it's coming from a place of intent where you're wanting people to share in that experience with you, or to understand the message that you're wanting to send in a genuine way, rather than it being ego-driven or, look at me, I'm fabulous, I can sing all the licks. You know, it's interesting. I even went to my daughter's performance recently, and you could see the immaturity sometimes on the stage. They were all trying to just present their best vocal licks. Like, look at me, I've look at what I've just learned, you know, it's my best vocal licks. And it's that maturity to sit back and to go, you know, I can do that, but I'm not going to do that now, because I want to just sit in the moment and have the beauty of the piece of music or the play or, you know, whatever the message is I'm wanting to send, to actually sit there so that the audience can hear that and listen to that, rather than it being an ego-driven, you must listen to all the fabulous things that I can do.
And I imagine when you're talking about performing on stage, anything that is more than one person, not a solo, is you are there to work in with others. The audience wants to hear cohesion. They want it all to work together for whatever the ultimate outcome is you take away.
Absolutely. And I think the thing, you know, we're talking about with voice, it really is about connection. It's about, if you do it right, it builds trust, it builds credibility. And in order to achieve those things, there has to be a level of vulnerability and a willingness to have this synergy with others, you know, so that you're communicating non-verbally and verbally, but communicating in all of those facets and ways.
Well, I do recall someone once saying that when they met the President Bill Clinton at the time, you always felt like you were the only person in the world when he shook your hand, because he'd always ask you about yourself and just hold the space and listen. So communication is also about not using your voice.
Silence, pause. We say that a lot to people. Don't be frightened. Even in music, don't ever be frightened. You don't have to fill every single space. If you were singing something, like say, for example, if you did the jazz scat, you know, and you went and it just went on and on and on and on and on, right?
Like they do with a drum.
So yeah. Like, it's like, oh my goodness, you know. But if you went da ba do da da, you know, the space creates the opportunity for the listener to catch up, rather than going, oh, hang on, what's just gone past? I don't know what just happened then. And, you know, when you're doing public speaking or someone comes to you and they've got a speech, I'll often say, if you say something really fantastic, give the audience a chance to actually process what you've just said. Don't just then go on to the next thing. Just pause for a second.
People listen for the pause. If you don't give them pause, then it doesn't enable them to process the information. And you can actually watch audiences react like that. And just on audiences, I think for a lot of performers or even anybody speaking, doesn't realise that everyone wants you to succeed. Who puts their hand up and says, I want to listen to a really poor piece of communication today, or a bad song? No one. Well, you wouldn't think.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's the thing, going back to what you said at the beginning, like, people are terrified. Some people actually say they would rather die.
Exactly.
Than do public speaking.
I think Jerry Seinfeld had that. He said, when you're at a funeral, you want to be the guy in the box, because you don't have to give the eulogy.
It's terrible. And it often comes back to that dinosaur part of our brain and standing up and having all eyes on you. And there's that feeling of, you know, you're completely 100% under threat at that point in time. And we're all so terrified of that. And that is when your voice is the most impacted, because your voice is then overridden by your autonomic nervous system.
Well, fear stops your voice when people can't scream because they're so scared.
It does. Yeah, it does. And so learning some strategies with voice, like we call it false vocal fold retraction, because they're the vocal folds that sit above your true vocal folds, and they are the parts that actually close on fear and on effort. And so sometimes you'll get up and you'll go to speak and you think, oh my gosh, my voice is just gone. It's just, there's nothing there. And so it's learning some skills to mitigate through those challenges when they invariably come. And people will often say to me, oh, how do I overcome my nerves and not get nervous? I always just say to people, you won't. That's just dreaming. There'll be times when you'll be less nervous, and there'll be times when you're terrified, and you have to learn how to create strategies to keep yourself in that middle ground so they've got a certain level of excitement so that you're maximizing your performance, but not so much excitement that you're actually, you know, ruining every chance you have of success and it being a complete and utter disaster. I never went on stage once and wasn't nervous, not once. And I think that's a great thing, because it enabled me to perform well and to have that cohesion with my band members and to look around to make eye contact and go, great, you know, we're in this together, let's go, we can do this. And that was what created a magical experience. If every single person on the stage wasn't nervous, I think it would have been really boring.
And also, you're all on. You're all very conscious, mm-hmm. whereas a lot of people stand up. And speaker, I do recall seeing a speaker when he had his presentation, and it was honestly, it was a shocker, quite boring. And somebody was doing the finger across the throat thing to get him to stop. Someone tapped their watch, and he looked at them and said, I'll have to start again now because you've interrupted me.
No.
Honestly, it was just one of the, we all felt for him so much. It was just monotone, screeds and screeds of information up on PowerPoints. We've all had the death by PowerPoint. Please don't have that, we could already read on a slide. But you still see it today, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes.
Tiny little bullet points that they're reading and you're reading.
Yeah, it's a whole skill set to learn how to deliver those things. And it does take a little bit of time. And I think at the core of it is learning to be conscious and evaluating your voice and actually evaluating how you genuinely sound and being willing to be a bit critical of your voice and listen back to it rather than go, oh, I don't want to listen to myself. Actually listen back to your voice and go, oh, wow, that's how I sound. What do I like about it? What do I not like about it? What would I change if I could? How does my tone perhaps be perceived by other people? Can I see that people might see me as being perhaps a little bit forceful or a bit abrupt or perhaps weak and mild or too girly? You know, you get that a lot. You know, women sort of go, oh, my voice is very high-pitched. Does it come across as too girly? And you know, I get people to say, well, what does that mean? Let's unpack that. Why is that a bad thing? In your particular industry, if you're only dealing with women, what does it matter if your voice is too girly?
Do you think people have fear around it because they see voice as a projection of their personality, that it's an attack on them, that if someone doesn't like my voice, they're not liking me? I'm just looking at the psychology of that.
It's 100% that. It's 100% that, because when people first come in for a singing lesson and they're beginners, and you think to yourself, they're not here for a singing lesson. They're here to learn to feel that moment of expression. And for a lot of people, it's so freeing that they burst into tears because it's the first time that they've really felt their voice feel fairly free.
It's not because they hurt themselves. I'm sorry.
No, it's not because they hurt themselves. It's just that moment of freedom without judgment. And now, like, people will say, oh gosh, I could never be a singer because, you know, I could never go on The Voice, or I could never go on. And so it's become a competition. Whereas singing and expression and music used to be a thing that you just did for fun. You know, everyone would sing along in the car and everyone would sing around the piano. I grew up singing around the piano with my brothers. That was the joy of my life. A lot of people don't do it anymore as just a form of fun and expression.
And do you think things like The Voice have impacted on that? Because certainly I'm a speaker, I'm not a singer. I wouldn't even attempt to, hadn't thought about, I know I'd need more than one lesson, Katrina. I'm speaking to Katrina Ryan, voice educator and coach. You may have had that thought you'd like to become a singer yourself. So Katrina, for me, it's something I would never think I can do. Could I?
Yes. Everybody can sing. My introduction to voice anatomy and physiology was through a voice model called Estill Voice Training. And Jo Estill is no longer with us, but she was one of the very first researchers in voice science in the late 80s. And her motto, which I have always stood by, is that everybody has a beautiful voice. They just need to know how to use it. And I truly, truly believe that. And I think that that's where a lot of people get stuck, because they judge their voices in comparison to the way other people sound, rather than just learning to own their own voice and loving their own voice and loving themselves and their voice being an expression of who they are. So I truly believe it, and I really genuinely try whenever I'm working with somebody to have that as the center and the core of the way I work with them, because no one judges their voice more than the person that's actually singing at the time or speaking at the time. I certainly don't. I don't go in there and go, oh gosh, that's terrible. Or, you know, it's often I think about it, it's like doctors, you know, when you strip down and they see you naked and they kind of go, oh, I've seen lots of naked bodies. It's just another body, you know.
It's another voice.
We have these perceptions of that our voice should be a certain way. And often it comes from when we're young, people saying you're too loud, you're too noisy. It can come from cultural belief systems. It can come from social environments or birth order. You know, often the youngest is loudest. You know, and that's because they're trying to always fight to be heard. So I ask a lot of those questions when people come for a session. I always say, let's talk about your culture and the way you grew up and the way voice was perceived in your home.
So let's talk about your services and what you do offer and how people can take advantage of them.
Yeah, so I have a private studio in Kensington, and people can book through my website or email me at info@katrinaryan.com.au. And I work with a whole range of things, from spoken voice to singing, and I also offer corporate training workshops as well. So people
do you go out? I'm thinking of our community centres, if they mm-hmm. wanted to have sessions run within their community centres.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Absolutely. And I really do have very much a passion for working with people that have perhaps feel that they've lost their voice. And often that comes from, you know, being in toxic workplaces or environments or perhaps family situations where people feel powerless, and often the voice will be the first thing to go. And it's building that confidence up again to go out and perhaps apply for a job, or, you know, speak to other people or walk in and ask for work and all those sorts of things. So I'd love to do that sort of thing.
So it's another tool also to combat loneliness, because if people have lost their voice, then they're not going to go out and connect with others.
It's very much that. And a lot of people just don't feel confident in speaking up anymore. You know, and often, like, you know, without opening another can of worms, but often women, particularly in their 50s, once they hit menopause, they feel very invisible. And then that's another extra added issue that can go on top, particularly if they're perhaps lost their job or family.
Children have left the nest, they're adult children.
Yeah, and perhaps their relationships have broken down. And so it's just this confidence, this loss of confidence that just keeps coming, you know, like a tsunami from all sides. And, you know, often just having fun, playing around. I'll often do a workshop with just improvisation where people can just play around with being vulnerable and making silly sounds. And, you know, that's often enough just to open up the opportunity to, oh, I can still do this, and just to feel that bravery and be on the precipice and know that it's actually all going to be fine.
Well, it's a wonderful service, Katrina, and thank you so much for coming and sharing about it today. I'm sure that'll be of real interest to our centres and something they can offer to their communities.
Thank you very much for having me, Kerry.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au, and feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.